Hello, and welcome back to another amazing episode of Denta. Hi, how are you? For the people that don't know, that haven't listened to the podcast before, or if you've listened to all of them since now, Denta is, in my Kaska language, means hi, how are you? So I figure that's a beautiful way to start my podcast, because I get to talk to amazing, beautiful, fantastic Indigenous individuals. And speaking of fantastic Indigenous individuals, I have a fantastic one with me now, Sarah Jones!
Hi.
Hi, Sarah. Would you like to introduce yourself?
For sure, yeah. Hi, I'm Sarah, Sarah Jones. I was born and raised in Vernon, British Columbia, and I'm Anishinaabe, and I'm from Treaty 3, Shoal Lake 40.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming. I'm very happy that you're here. Mm-hmm. I've met you only like a couple of times very briefly, yeah. But you've always struck me as a very fantastic person with a very good energy. Mm. And then the part that I think I finally did have a conversation with you, for people that don't know, Sarah is an artist. An amazing artist, and you did work for Advocacy Canada. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about that?
For sure, yeah. Yes, it was about, like, maybe this time last year, actually. I saw a Facebook post just about, like, a billboard, and I decided to submit my portfolio, and I got in contact with Advocacy Canada, and we kind of just brainstormed together an idea, and kind of just really focused on, I mean, the message was like the most important thing. We spent a lot of time trying to decide like what message we wanted to put out, and we went or decided with You Belong. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of created some art to go along with that, and then yeah, the billboard was up. I think it was up until like December 9th or 10th of last year. So it was like up there for a good 6 months. Yeah. And it was awesome because I could drive by and see it all the time.
Yeah, like your artwork just on the highway, which is pretty flipping cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you had Indigenous aspects in it, right? Because you had yeah. the local language mm-hmm. in it. Did that also say We Belong or a close interpretation mm-hmm. of it?
Yeah, so we contacted the Selix Language House mm-hmm. Just via email. And we said, you know, here's our project and here's the message that we'd like. And we really wanted to pay homage to like the Selix land because the billboard is located on Selix yeah. land. I think the message stands for we all belong together yeah. is the direct translation. Mm-hmm. It was really, really nice to collaborate with them and figure that out together.
That's so cool. I love seeing yeah. like native language because it's written so fantastic.
Right?
I can never mm-hmm. say it sometimes because sometimes the letters have like a different
different types of
yeah exactly yeah. that makes it hard but you also had Indigenous imagery in it as well, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Can you speak a bit about that?
For sure. Yeah, I loved seeing the language. If you go to there's like the You Belong website, there is like a translation that the Selix Language House recorded for us, mm-hmm. which is awesome. So if you do want to know how to say it, it's up there. I do not know how. I wish I did. we had like a, what is it called? Like a focus group, I guess, yep. with Advocacy Canada and kind of decided what we wanted together. But the elements kind of came from my brain, but with the help of everybody. Like when I'm doing projects where I'm trying to capture someone else's idea, it's usually, I don't know, the input helps a lot. It's mm-hmm. really good to have feedback. Like it creates a lot of images in my head.
Yeah.
So we went with a swallowtail butterfly, a maple leaf, an eagle feather, and then a strawberry. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it was. So I kind of came up with those elements based off of the land, like the Okanagan. I've lived here my whole life, so I kind of just took aspects that reminded me of the Okanagan. Oh, there's an Alberta rose, too.
There we go.
There's an Alberta rose. I was like, I know I'm forgetting one. the swallowtail, we didn't do like the traditional yellow and black. We went with the trans flag mm-hmm. Just because it was front and center and that was like the focus of our message. We really wanted it to focus on trans lives because yeah. that's like the most important thing ever right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So me and Wilbur decided that together and it was actually really funny how we came up with that as the focus. It was like last May when I was designing it and there was this like abundance of swallowtail butterflies just like everywhere and I like sent him a picture and I was like, I think we should, there was like one that like landed on me and I was like, I think we should do this. Yeah. And he was like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
It was like a sign, right?
It honestly was. Yeah.
The ancestors were telling you. I was going to say, put this in there.
Literally.
Listen to the signals, the signs.
Exactly. So that's how we decided on that together. And then the other elements kind of were just what reminded me of the Okanagan and the land and what I love about it. And then like the strawberry I chose because it's really like a sacred object in Anishinaabe culture. Mm-hmm. I think the Ojibwe word is Odaimin. Mm-hmm. And it represents like strength and femininity, and it's really important to my culture. So that's where that came from. And then of course eagle feathers are sacred. They're really important. Yeah, it just kind of came out of my own head.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's fantastic. Yeah. And if you do want to see the artwork, it's on youbelong.org, is it?
Or youbelong.ca.
.ca, mm-hmm. Close.
.org.
.org.
We are not an organization. Yeah.
If you want to see the artwork, you can find it on there as well. But you also do, like, is art your passion or a job or
something? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I actually went to UBCO and I did a bachelor's degree in psychology. Mm-hmm. And that was fun. That was slay. Very slay. But I was like, do I want to do this for the rest of my life?
Yeah.
And then after that, I started working at the local Friendship Center in Kelowna. And that's kind of like where my Indigenous experience began. I mean, always been Native, obviously, but that's kind of when I started reconnecting. I was like, oh wait, I like this stuff. This is really nice.
Yeah. It's kind of wild. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, but it's wild because this happened to me as well. When we're younger, we may grow up with our indigeneity around us or with our parents putting influence, but then we take a step away from it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if that's, well, I do know this. It's because it's societal pressures telling us that we shouldn't do this, or they have a specific image of natives. And then if we don't fit it, we feel like we shouldn't be a part of it because we are urban as well.
Yeah.
And then when we get older and we get reintroduced to it, it rebuilds this flair and we're like, why'd we step away? Like,
yeah, you know? Right? I think culture is something in our society that is so overlooked. Mm-hmm. And then when you can come back to that, it's like a, it's almost like a rebirth.
Yeah.
Like your Jesus costume.
Sorry. For the people that don't know at home, I'm going to let you all in on a little thing. We are doing a Jesus-themed parody show for Easter, and it's all meant as a joke because religion's a joke. I'll say that up front here. It's silly. So I was in drag with a robe that cut up to my crotch and had thigh-high boots on and a sequined underwear. So I look like a very slay Jesus.
You did.
But I just don't want people to think I'm dressing up as Jesus just all the time. I have the power of Christ flowing through me. Yeah. You know? No.
It honestly, I didn't even recognize it as Jesus. It was kind of giving like Coachella hippie. Like it was.
Yeah, my throne crown that I had can throw a few flowers in there and it can definitely be that, right?
Yes, totally. But then I saw the cross. I was like, oh. Okay.
I know you're coming into this filming space and I'm sitting here dressed like Jesus when just you walk in.
Yeah.
This is not an Indigenous podcast.
I feel like you're very like tall and your presence is like super, it's super there. Yeah. So you're the first thing I noticed when I walk in the room and I was like, oh. It was great though.
Really perfect. Perfect. Yeah. We were talking earlier because we just finished filming another podcast and you came in and Dustin was like, oh my God, it'd be kind of weird if she came in here just as Jesus. And right when you said that, you're like, hey.
Oh my gosh. Cause you guys looked at me and were like, eh. Oh my God. Perfect. I love it.
Okay. Back to us and culture and not Jesus. The Bible stays outside, in the rain, room. Getting moldy as it should.
Agree.
All of a sudden you're like, I'm very religious.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. All right. Talk about how, like, culture. How is often looked over?
Mm-hmm. I mean, my story is like a little, I feel like every Indigenous person's story is like so complicated. Mm-hmm. So I grew up urban. My reservation is, the nearest town is Kenora, Ontario. It's about 3 hours, 3 hours like east of Winnipeg. Yeah. But it's just over the Ontario border. Yeah. So my grandma left there in the 60s. She was a residential school survivor, so she attended and then was like, oh, I need to leave. So she got on a train, because that's how they did it. She got on like the CN rail and she came to Merritt, and then she met my grandpa, and they kind of, that's how they started their life. Because of her experience, culture was something that she not only didn't share, but hid. Like, it was hidden to protect my mom and to protect my uncle, because, like, my grandma really thought, like they were going to be persecuted and they were going to be taken from her. Yeah.
That was a real concern. Like, it wasn't just, like, thought. Like, it could have happened.
No, like, if she hadn't left, my mom would have been in day school. Yeah. When we went back and, met everybody, reconnected, all of the people that were her age were either scooped, they were removed, or they went to day school. Yeah. So my grandma was literally right. Like, she...
So I gotta get the heck out of here.
Literally, that's what she said. So she moved. And so that is, like, a huge disconnect for me. And my dad is white, so we never really explored it, like, at all. I always knew it was a part of me. But, like, I didn't really understand, like, what it meant. And there was, like, some experiences that I had, like, had in school where people would, like, say that I'm Indigenous, but I just never, like, I never had the background to, like, follow up with that. Like, in social studies, people would ask me questions, and I'm like, I don't know. And then you're, like, literally singled out in class. And you don't have information. And then that's, like, embarrassing.
Yeah.
But you don't know why it's embarrassing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't know why.
Don't know why.
Yeah, so it was, like, so confusing and so frustrating.
Yeah, but it's also weird when you go into a school setting or any setting, because I was talking with another person about how even in, like, corporations, if you're the one Indigenous person and they have, like, a new, like, a program coming out that's Indigenous-focused, they instantly ask you for your expertise. And you're like, that's not my job or my position. Like, we have all these resources, and you in school as well, because you're fairly young, so school would have been not too long ago. For them still to ask you authority finger on indigeneity, and you're like, you're the teacher. You should know this history. And then when you think about the calls to action, the 94 calls to action, one of it says that the teachers need to be able to teach the true history of Indigenous folks. And that's not really being happened. Which they should. So it's just wild that even with yourself, you're still looked on and be like, hey, you should know this. And then you said it makes you feel like, since you didn't know, like, I feel bad, but why do I feel bad?
But you don't even know why you feel bad in the first place. I think, like I would call it tokenism, honestly.
Oh, totally.
And, like, I was, like, in social studies class and, like, in, like, high school and elementary school. So I'm, like, a child being asked questions that I don't know. And then now, like, I mean, I was in, like, an Indigenous work space. So everybody had knowledge that they were bringing to the table. It was really collaborative. But as I'm going into the workforce and stuff, you know, it's interesting to see how we're treated and how, like, there's positions that are made, like, just for us. But then our like, your entire job, like, for example, my sister is, like, an Indigenous coordinator for a kidney foundation. And her job is to connect with Indigenous folks. So her entire job is doing that.
Which is good. And some people once asked me about this, and I was like, well, the reason we need it is because there's so much trauma with Indigenous people and, like, hospitals.
So
they do need someone there to be a liaison to let them know that things are getting better. You don't have to have these same experiences when you're back before, because even when I'm not super old, but I'm old enough to know that going into a hospital, and if I had anything wrong, the first questions I would get asked is if I drank. And that's because I'm Indigenous, so they were trying to find a way to tie it in and be like, oh, you're just an alcoholic. Be like, well, that's not it. My leg's broken.
You have to, like, prove that you're actually sick.
You have to prove that you're sick. And then, like, it's unfair, but these liaisons, I feel, are doing a good thing. And they have a lot of people being like, well, why are we creating jobs? I'm like, well, we're creating jobs because you broke the system.
Like, and now we need people.
Yeah, to rebuild and reconnect.
And I know, like, at the local hospital, like, there is one Native liaison who deals with all of the Indigenous patients, and it's, like, not enough. Like, just with what my mom's told me, like, they have one lady for an entire hospital.
That's,
like,
a lot.
A lot for her. And also, like, the impact on that person and, like, what that would do, like,
because you need to have, like, self-care. You need to be able to take care of yourself.
So how do you, like, do that when you're taking on so much trauma? And you already have your own because you're Indigenous. You were born with it.
And then you're probably connecting with them on a deeper level because you understand, right? Well, as understand as you can, because, like you said, we have our own traumas. But there's a level of familiarity there that can also just hurt a little bit more.
Yeah, right.
Well, mm-hmm. I haven't thought of these conversations before, but now it's just like blossoming in my head. Like,
right?
They need to have time for themselves.
Mm-hmm. And like what you brought up and like how like we're treated in hospitals in the first place. Like in my psych degree, we talked a lot about how like in medical institutions, it's often taught that Black and brown people have tougher skin, so they need needles poked harder.
Yeah.
And their pain tolerance is way higher, but that's not true. Like, no. It's literally not true. Yeah. It's
you still have pain receptors, right? You don't have to hit us.
Yes.
You
know? Not too hard.
They won't feel this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's so wild. Mm-hmm. And then just thinking about being treated differently wherever we are. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it is with yourself, but mm-hmm. me looking at you, you're visually native.
Right.
And then, so have you ever been into a situation where you were treated differently because of the color of your skin?
Yes. Yeah. It's honestly, it's been a part of my life since I was little. Mm-hmm. My sister and my dad are white. My sister's white passing. Mm-hmm. And so my whole experience was, are you adopted? Like, yeah. you're Jocelyn's sister. Like, are you adopted?
How was that?
How did you get here? Yeah. But then they see my mom and I look exactly like her. So it's like, oh, okay.
They're like, okay. But that's such a weird question to ask a child, right?
Yeah.
Are you related?
Yeah.
Because there's a color difference here.
Yeah. And the thing is, we do look alike, but it's just different colors.
That's the thing that people notice right away, right? And it's wild because people that aren't a person of color, this isn't me victimizing anyone, but if they are more fair skinned, they don't mm-hmm. understand when we say that the color of skin is usually what people see first.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that could be a good thing where people are recognizing a difference. But a lot of times it comes with stereotypes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like for one, I'm Indigenous and I look Indigenous. Well, actually, no, I shouldn't say that. I look culturally ambiguous sometimes. People think I'm Filipino. People think I'm Hispanic. Yeah. They think I'm everything under the sun that's not white. Mm-hmm. I even got Japanese once. And I'm like, I don't see that one. But slang. I was like, I'll take it. Yeah. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
And it's fine when that part when they're trying to find like a way to connect with you, I guess. But like I said, a lot of times it comes with a stereotype. Because people used to ask me like how much if I can drink my friend to the table, and I was like, well, for starters, I don't drink anymore. But
like, yeah, that is such like a pointed thing, and it's like it's like a microaggression where if you don't think about it too much, it's fine. But it's not. Like, why did they say that to you?
Yeah, exactly. Where'd that come from? Did they think it's okay?
Yeah.
And people don't understand microaggressions either.
No.
Yeah. They're like, oh, like it was fine. It was just a little tiny thing that I said. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you don't understand. You ever hear like the Chinese torture or the 1,000 paper cuts?
Yeah.
Everybody's like, you don't understand. Like one paper cut, sure. Totally. I was like, but if you're getting cut by tiny little cuts 1,000 times, it's no longer a tiny wound. It's your, it's a huge wound.
Paper cuts hurt. They hurt.
They do really hurt. And when I see like someone do it on TV, there's a part.
I can't.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Such a good metaphor for it, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true because it builds on top of each other and people don't know that. So people that have microaggressions, and if I do it back to you, I'm brown.
So it's fine.
That's right.
I think the wildest one I ever got was a guy on a dating app was like, are you Thai? Are you from Thailand? I was like, what? No. Where did you get that from?
I want an exotic beauty.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. No, the racially ambiguous is such a thing. And it's like seriously affected my life. Like I remember from a young age having to be like, oh, okay, I am different. There's a reason that maybe the boys choose not to chase me and they chase the rest of the white girls.
Yeah.
You know? And then like I remember when I was like 16, the guy that I was dating was like, I don't really want to bring you home. I don't want my mom to know that you're native. I was like, oh, that guy was a psycho.
Yeah, so dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, seriously.
But then when we think about that, what is she saying at home for him to have this concern,
right?
Like people think they're safe behind their closed doors, but people are listening.
Yeah.
But also, if you're going to be a bigot and an asshole, you shouldn't reproduce.
That's really sound advice.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, not to get into the trauma, but I remember my grandma is very, very dark skinned.
Mm-hmm.
She has big lips, big nose, you know, and the rest of my family does too. We actually like way back, we have like some black ancestors, mm-hmm. But like way back, 1800s. but it affects how they look, how we look, right? And she told me that when she was in residential school, the fairer girls would make fun of her because of her skin. They would call her darky.
Yeah, that's wild, right? Because the lateral violence as well.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So you're pretty fair skinned for a native as well, but in the summer do you get quite dark?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm the same way. I'm pretty fair, but since my dad's Métis, he's very white passing. Mm-hmm. So I would always get made fun of from my native side about being too white, and then my white side about being too brown. Mm-hmm. And there was just like a narrow route that I had to navigate between.
Yeah.
And he's like, you can never win.
No. Yeah. Yeah. So if you're
but who's
too
succeeding
white,
and better looking now?
Just kidding. But if you're too white or you're too dark, like, what are you?
Yeah, exactly, like, right? Yeah. Be like, I'm still your family. I'm still your cousin. Like, why are you putting out that lateral violence? Seriously. And I also think that's something that us as natives need to work on as well is literally the lateral violence. Mm. There's so much in-house fighting and so much in-house hate and so much in-house jealousy that I constantly try to live on the thing that if I'm always want to build up other Indigenous people, which is part of the reason for this podcast. I just want people to know that we all come from different walks of life and we can all succeed and still be happy. Doesn't matter if you're just working, doing whatever. I can't think of a job that's not good, because if you're supporting yourself, it's all good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's always trying to build each other up, because if we can grow together, we can become stronger as a people, and we can just show the world that we're not this drunk person that's passing out on the road.
And it sucks that we feel that we have to work so hard to get rid of that stereotype. But I like actually remember my mom telling me she didn't know that she was Native until she was 10, because the only Native representation she knew was drunk people on the street.
Yeah.
And then she was like, oh, I'm one of those.
Yeah.
Right. And then you have to work your whole life to not be that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah. And we should talk to your mom. I'd love to have her on this.
Yes.
Because like I have the same kind of story, is that I only knew them as drunk people on the res. Mm. And then I would see all the white kids in my school getting treated better.
Yeah.
So then I started acting like the white students.
Yeah.
And then what do you know? I started getting more attention from the teacher. I started getting more respect. So then in my mind, at a little 7-year-old, it was like, oh, white is right.
Right. And that like affects when you're like, when you experience those things at such a young age, it sticks with you.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we can be these role models for future students or future youth, that's what I'm aiming for. If I can have some of them not have those feelings they have, and same as you being a powerful young Indigenous person, if you can go into the world and have someone see you and be like, that's amazing. Indirectly becoming a role model.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let's like this back around you, because I feel like this interview is a lot about me so far right now.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah.
Good.
So you being a young, beautiful Indigenous person living in the Okanagan, you are also a queer individual as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about being Indigenous and queer.
Sure. So, I mean, I've known that I was like queer since I was little. I had lots of crushes on lots of cartoons, and they were all girls.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, that's fine. Let's just put that in a box and deal with that later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was something that I just kind of didn't really deal with. But then when I started reconnecting and I found out what a two-spirit person was, I felt this like instant like pull and like, oh, okay. Because like when I was younger, I was like very masculine, and I always felt I had to prove myself. But if that part has like always been a part of me, like a softness and like a hardness, and I feel like they just come together in me so well. Like I definitely, my gender is I'm like a cis woman, and that's you know, that's different than most, well, not most, but some two-spirit people.
Yeah.
And that's something that I want to point out. Like, yeah. I have a lot of privileges, being able to present feminine in my gender that I was born with. But yeah, I've always just felt like a middle, middle ground. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You made a good point, though, but saying that you're a cis woman and two-spirit, I think a lot of the misconception with two-spirit as well is they think that it has to be non-binary or trans with that, or isn't. That just became, it was just an umbrella term to say if you're Indigenous and queer, because they wanted to step away from the colonial views, because let's be real, colonial and residential school beat into us said queerness was wrong mm-hmm. and bad and evil and should be feared and should be wiped out. Mm-hmm. So then us finding our own word was for us to step away and to remember the honorific that it was that we had in our communities. Because mm-hmm. in Indigenous communities, we all had a place for everyone, mm-hmm. which is great. Yeah. So I find, yes. I appreciate you saying that you yeah. had to say that you're a cis woman, but also mm-hmm. I think we just need to let the regular people know that if we say we're Two-Spirit, they need to not think non-binary mm-hmm. or trans.
Yeah, for sure.
It just means we're where the fuck we want to be and we're not heteronormative.
Exactly. Totally. Yeah, like Two-Spirit and non-binary and trans, they're so close. And I definitely feel like a little bit of that, the non-binary vibe, like personally. But yeah, it's really, I don't know, it's so interesting. Like in searching, just researching like Anishinaabe culture, there's 6 different words for gender
yeah.
that's documented, you know, and we don't even know what's not documented because
yeah, the records, what we lost.
Yeah. And the records were made by white people.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally made mm-hmm. by the conqueror.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And our history was always oral. Mm-hmm. And then when we lost yeah. our language, and we since we lost it, it's diminishing, which we're having resurgences all across Canada, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. Who knows what we lost during those times, right?
Right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Since you had 6 documented words, mm-hmm. I asked my family how many they had for hours mm-hmm. and they're like, well, we only know 2, but they remember that there was more, they just don't remember the words for it.
Right. And isn't that so crazy? It's such like a confusing and frustrating experience. It's so close,
yeah,
but it's not there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was like, well, we're in a perfect time where we can create words.
Yeah.
Just like we do with English.
Yeah. Just like we do with Two-Spirit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We created the Two-Spirit word and yeah. we pan-Indian and made across the words. And then different cultures are finding their words they had for it, mm-hmm. which is amazing and beautiful. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, you made a little point about how you found Two-Spirit. You just felt like it fit. Mm-hmm. Let's talk more about that because sure. I love when I hear this because it was kind of the same for myself as well. Mm-hmm. I knew I was Indigenous. I knew I was queer. I'm not trans. I'm not non-binary or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But when I found Two-Spirit, mm-hmm. I was like, this just feels like me.
Yeah.
It feels right.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. It's almost like a comfort in that like negative space. Well, not negative as in a negative space,
yeah, yeah.
but you know, like it's like a middle ground.
Yeah.
It's really kind of hard to even explain how like it makes you feel. It's just something that you're just like, oh. Yeah.
It's like a puzzle. You're yeah. like, this is the last piece. Well, not the last, but it's a piece in the puzzle and it fits.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's so mm-hmm. exciting. I'm happy for you. Good for
Thanks.
You.
Yay. Me too. Yeah. It's good. It's nice when you feel like you can identify like how you feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that there's like a word for it.
Yeah. And there's a place mm-hmm. for you.
Yeah.
Because sometimes mm-hmm. as Indigenous folks living in this world, we sometimes don't feel like we have a place and mm-hmm. or as a queer person. And then so things become harder. And then once you find mm-hmm. a place, it's easier to grow.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's so good.
Especially like somewhere like Kelowna, there are so many like urban Indigenous people here that we don't even like realize. Like it almost feels like we're all alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then working at the Friendship Center, it was like there was so many people that are not just Sealix or like Okanagan. There are people, there's everywhere.
Yeah,
like
everywhere.
We're all here, but we're just hidden.
Yeah, literally. And then we do have community, and then we only come up for certain things. So it's, mm-hmm. I try to connect with as many as I can. But I also used to work at the Kelowna Friendship Society mm-hmm. and years and years ago. And no way. I loved it because you sometimes do think that you're alone when you're an urban yeah. native, because I'm not from the area. I'm a visitor to this land as well. Mm. I'm from the Yukon. So coming here, I didn't know a lot of Indigenous folks. So working there was quite nice because I got to meet a bunch of people around town. Mm-hmm. But you also said when you started working there, it was a reconnect to culture.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell a bit about that?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, so I got a job there and I was working as the events coordinator, but I ended up doing like a lot more stuff.
As you do in that position there.
As you do.
Start with one thing and then they're like, you're good at this.
Let's keep going. Yeah. Yeah, and it's like a very much like a head dive just straight
yep.
into it. Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, like I always knew and recognized that I was Indigenous, but my grandma like very much hid that information. Mm-hmm. So, but it's really funny. Like I was talking with my counselor who is an Indigenous woman, which is like so amazing. Like yeah. I can't even explain. but just how like my grandma did pass down those core values and that wisdom, but just in a different way. Yeah. It just wasn't an Indigenous way, but it was still like
Indigenous.
Yeah, it was still Indigenous. Like, even though she's so far removed from it, and it honestly scares her. Like, I was visiting her, and I learned like some songs on my drum and was playing them for her, and she was like, "Did anyone like tell you that was bad?" Like,
oh wow.
Yeah. And it was like a shot through the heart, honestly. Yeah. She has had a stroke, so she has trouble speaking, but the word that came up for her was that it's heresy.
Yeah.
And I literally couldn't believe that. Like, I just stared at her for so long because like, ugh, it's just so awful to like hear that your culture is heresy. Like, oh
yeah.
Like, I can't believe that.
Especially where she came from with residential schools. Like, their basis, their main thing was to kill the native and the child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it worked for a lot of people, which is the terrifying part.
Yeah.
And then it didn't work for a lot that, you know, just went back to their reservations and didn't live a good life.
Mm-hmm.
But with your grandmother, smart for her to get out of there. She knew that she had to get out of there to get your mother to not have it.
Yeah, to not have
the. But it's sad to hear the drums and then have that feel, and that fright.
That scare. Yeah, like. Cause the reason I wanted to do it is I learned the drumming at the Friendship Center. That's, we used to do like drum circles every Wednesdays. And that's where I learned those songs. And it was so nice, to have that. And it's such a healing sound and a healing feeling. And that's what I wanted to bring to her. But instead it brought up like fear.
Yeah.
She was scared for me.
Yeah.
She was worried for me, which is terrifying. And I was like, no, Dana, like, this is great. Like, this is what I need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's a resurgence now. We're bringing this back.
Yes.
It's welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah. So with the Friendship Center, it was, I want to say it was a breath of fresh air, but actually the what came to my head was like almost a slap in the face of culture. Like, it was just like, bam, here you go. Yeah. And like, to me, like, we're obviously all different types of native, and it's, you know, Indigenous culture is not a monolith, but the fact that we were able to, like, I just had so much knowledge passed down on me so fast, and protocols. Yeah.
To process it.
Yeah, yeah, having to process it, and like meeting elders and connecting with elders and learning how to treat them. Like, obviously I knew already to respect your elders, but like, just the customs and everything. It was so nice. Like, it was just great. It was like, I was like returning to what I should have had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, it's a very strong sense of community there at the Friendship Center, which I think is fantastic. And it's a great place for growth. Mm-hmm. And I always tell urban natives, I'm like, go there. It's like, you'll find something. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I do like that about the Friendship Center, but also one thing about it is that it is a very big, you're being confronted with the realities of the cloner world and what it's done to Indigenous people there as well, because you see a lot of beautiful things happen there. You see a lot of community come together, but it's also an outreach center as well. So you see a lot of what has happened to our brothers and sisters and how they're dealing with it or not dealing with it. So you get that dichotomy of the very polar opposites of the intensity of like what has happened and trying to rebuild to beautiful community.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very tiring.
Yes.
Because when I was there, it was a lot of ups and downs. There was thankfully a lot more ups, but there was some deep downs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that cultural component is so important to also be so close to these people that are struggling, and like being able to like bring that to them, because even if they don't have anything going for them, they know that maybe they can go to the Friendship Center and they can get a smudge, or they can just like sit in a place where there's native people and they won't be judged.
Literally. Yeah. You can go there and get a sandwich if you need it.
Yeah.
You
know? Oh my gosh. Like, they have such good food.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah. They would have, they had the elders lunch every, I forgot when they did it.
Right. I think it was every third week.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm, and it was fantastic. Like, and they always had like food going in and out of there. There was bannock all the time.
I'm actually, I did a mural, and KFS was like kind of a part of the collaboration. So we're doing some sort of celebratory dinner for it. And they're having cultural food. So I'm so excited.
When
I don't know
this?
What it is. Exactly. I think it's the 29th.
Of this month?
Yes. Yep.
Oh,
February
on Tuesday.
29th.
What, Thursday? Sorry, Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that the Friendship
Center? It's 5 to 7.
Maybe I'll pop by.
You should.
I should.
I'm going to bring my mom, and I'm going to bring my favorite elder. I'm going to call him up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is going to be way after. This episode is going to come out way after that, but I'm going to let you know it's going to be really tasty.
Yeah, Yes. Do a little pop in, like, it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. February 29th. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pop in.
Yeah. You should. Yeah. Really should. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever partake in any of the June 21st celebrations, like Indigenous, National Indigenous Days?
So I did with the Friendship Center, and I actually went last year because they have like a little powwow that they do.
Yeah. It's gotten so big.
Mm-hmm. It has. The whole street is like closed down.
Before it used to just be like in their house, in the building. That's all it used to be. Wow. And then the last year I was working there, it was the biggest it was at the time. And we took over that parking lot beside Yama's and we filled up that area, which is great. Oh, wow. And now it's like the whole street.
It's literally it's a block party basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so great. It's so fun. If anyone has a chance, this is a good thing for all the white or non-Indigenous people in the world. Mm-hmm. They think they can't come. Mm-hmm. No, it is open to community. We want everyone to come there and have a good time. We want you to see the beautiful side of Indigenous life because unfortunately society and the news and media portray Indigenous still not in a good light. Yeah. Granted, it's a truthful light sometimes by saying that we're not living in great conditions, which a lot of us aren't. Mm-hmm. So please come to these happy moments so you can see there's a lot of Indigenous joy out there. Mm-hmm. It's not all sad.
Yeah.
Because once again, all Indigenous life is different. There's a lot of beauty out there.
Yeah.
Come to our show.
Come to our show. There's only one.
Come to at least Indigenous Day, at least June 21st. It happens every year down at the Friendship Center in Kelowna, if you're around. Mm-hmm. Actually happens all across Canada at most Friendship Centers that do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Once again, we've switched that back to myself again, but back to you. I want to talk about you and your art, though.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're a fantastic artist. Mm-hmm. If people want to find you or see your art, how can they do that?
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I had a billboard, which was so crazy.
Which is amazing.
I've never, like, had my art kind of shown, like, publicly in that way. Like, bam, right in your face.
Yeah.
It was really a different experience.
It was also during the summer. So if you think about the millions of people that drive that highway, everyone saw your art.
Yeah. And like the reach that it had was like insurmountable. Like I would just have like random people message me and be like, hey, I saw your billboard. I drive by it every day. I just love it. And like, it was so nice. It's really interesting. I don't know. I never thought that I would have a career like as an artist. Like obviously I did my BA in psych and I didn't really have like a lot of encouragement with it growing up. It was always something that I did. But then when I reconnected, art was right there. Mm-hmm. It was like, I don't know, together. I came into them at the same time and like, I think it's part of my journey. Mm-hmm. I have like my great uncle Terry, when I went back to Kenora and I met everybody, he's like an artist. He's been an artist for such a long time and I got to like meet him.
Nice.
And like just feeling like such a closeness to this like random native guy that I don't know, right? And then it's like, oh wait, we're related and we're related like in our artistic values as well. Like it was just so great. It was just such a big part. Like the two are so combined, like being Indigenous and being an artist, for me at least.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually started at the Friendship Center. I designed their logo.
Nice.
Yeah. So they, it has like the Celix for Food Chiefs. So I got to work closely with, the people there and we designed it together and that's kind of where I started. And then, I actually did like a mural in the summer. It's at Cher. I think it's 581 Gaston Avenue is the address.
Like Cher, like the thrift store?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
I did that with another artist. His name's Tyrone Whitehawk, and he's awesome. So we did that in the summer, and
I'm going to have to check that out. Is it the front of the building?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the entire building.
The entire building. Mm-hmm. Nice.
It's beautiful. Like
I was there like 3 days ago, and I just tunnel visioned right into that door.
You're like, I got a thrift.
If you're ever there, literally.
Yeah.
If you're ever there, make sure to check out the whole building, because you made that with Tyrone.
I did.
It was so cool.
Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Such a great experience, like working together, but like the message too. And like such a good expression of my art. Yeah, it's like I've always just been like small pen and ink kind of drawing. Mm-hmm. So then to like apply it to something that's so large is just like, it's really interesting. It's amazing. Like I love it so much. And then I'm working on another mural, not a billboard. I'm working on a mural for a high school in the Mission right now.
Yeah.
And then just kind of like doing my own thing. I do like all kinds of art. I really like digital art is probably the most common that I'm doing right now, but I love painting. Mm-hmm. Obviously like the mural was so much fun. And I also love tattooing. I've been like spending a lot of time like researching Anishinaabe tattoo practices, and all of the knowledge is colonial, so there's not that much, but there's like real practitioners that are doing amazing things and bringing like the hand poking back, and it's so cool.
Is that what you want to get into, like hand poking?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Well, I'd like to
I have a canvas here.
I would actually love to do like get a tattoo apprentice somewhere, an apprenticeship, and like express my art that way. I feel like I would be really good at it. Yeah, I gave my sister a hand poke one time, and it was so much fun to stab her. So much fun. But I actually like really enjoyed the practice, and then to learn that there's like a cultural component to that too is like it brings it like even closer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that you mentioned that starting your art was brought you closer to culture as well. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like a lot of people don't realize that when you have an oral culture, like an oral history culture, art is so intertwined with everything that we do. Mm-hmm. The same with myself. I'm not a textual artist at all. Mm-hmm. I can paint my face, but just can't paint anything else.
It's
a skill. Yeah, it's an art. Mm-hmm. But I just love being creative. I find it's fantastic. Yeah. And I love that you said that just brought you closer to culture, because it kind of is, right? Like when you mentioned earlier about having moments of your life where you do something and it just feels right. Mm-hmm. And I feel that even though a lot of Indigenous culture has been erased or has been gotten rid of, we still feel it in here. So when we do stuff, it's just like, it's like our ancestors again coming through us being like, this is correct. This is right. This is where you should be going, or this is what we did. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you're practicing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, it's like a third voice inside of you or something. Mm-hmm. That's just like, yes, do that.
Yeah, exactly. You're on the right path. Mm-hmm. You're on the red road. You're doing well.
Yes. Yeah. And like intergenerational trauma is so strong. And like with my psych background, there are studies that have shown the effects of intergenerational trauma. Yep. There was a study done on Holocaust survivors, and it actually changed the DNA makeup of their children, the people that experienced the Holocaust. So like we also experienced a Holocaust, so feeling that, like, I don't know, it's just, it's so strong, but also like the strength of culture and like what that does for us as Indigenous people is so strong that it almost like it's like the it's the thing that kept us going, like resiliency. So we have like this almost this need to go back to it, I think, because it was taken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people understand, like, when you start connecting with culture, there is a healing aspect of it. And then when we hear people, it sounds cheesy. That's what I thought when I first heard it. Like, you should go to like a smudging thing. You should go to this, like, it'll help you heal. And I'm like, yeah. And then, and then once I started doing it, and it's like you said, it's like a need. It's like a want. It's like our soul telling us that this is what you should be doing, because we don't have that cultural aspect and we're rebuilding it. So now I'm telling people, it's like, you should go to a healing circle, you should go to a powwow, you should do these things. You don't realize you need it until you're there, because people can tell you should do something, but then we're stubborn. People.
Oh my gosh.
We're like, I need to experience it, so go do it.
Yeah, we're stubborn and we're also messed up.
Yeah. It's a good combination.
Yeah, for sure. But I feel that corny feeling, like when I think about like my life before I reconnected and what that Sarah would think about the current Sarah, like there is almost a corniness to it. It's like, I don't know, but
it's a very colonial way of thinking. And then we're so indoctrinated and so entrenched in it that we have to unlearn these habits. Mm-hmm. And that's hard.
Yeah.
People think unlearning is easy. It's like, no, it's not.
No, it's hard. It's hard being Indigenous.
Yeah.
Like, it's just really interesting. I don't know. And I really liked what you said about how, like, the lateral violence, it's almost kind of like, well, no wonder, because we all have like so much that's happened to like our individual families. Mm-hmm. So when we're trying to come together and create a community, we don't have conflict resolution skills, like, at all. No. So there's going to be, like, strife, and that is an effect of colonialism, again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Stems from the whites.
Yep.
Oh, goodness. Oh, okay. We're going to, I love what you said for this whole time, but we are going to start cutting this short, cutting it out. We're getting to the end. Mm-hmm. But I had such a lovely conversation with you, Sarah. Mm-hmm. I appreciated you before, but now I adore you. I think you're just such a light, mm-hmm. and it's so fantastic seeing the things that you're doing spreading this joy, because you're a strong, beautiful woman now. I can only imagine the powerhouse that you're just going to become as you just reconnect more with culture and life and love and beauty, mm-hmm. because that's what you emanate. Thank you so much for coming. Is there any way, if someone wants to get a hold of your art, or they can find out?
So my Instagram is honeycubpokes. Honeycubpokes. Okay. Yeah, for the poking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Preparing. Yeah. And then I also I have my link tree and everything on there. So yeah.
Nice. If anyone watches this and you need a mural done, contact Sarah, or keep an eye on them, because they may become a tattoo poking artist mm-hmm. one day. Yeah. Or maybe one day you'll see it on my arm. Ooh. And you'll be like, Sarah Original, bitches.
I like that.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast. Thank you for coming to Denta. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad I could do this. And I feel like we should just keep talking, but let's go.
Yeah. We can keep talking, but the cameras will be off.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll have you for season 2.
Ooh.
There you go. We'll see where we've grown since then. Or we'll see if there's more anger in us. I don't know. We'll find out.
Probably.
Yeah. A little bit of both. A little bit of both. Hidden behind a smile.
Always.
All right. Bye-bye.